Hello and welcome to the EURETINA interviews on AMD innovations. I'm Dr. Anat Lowenstein, and today I am joined by Dr. Sebastian Wolf and Raminta Dayoni. Welcome. Together, we will discuss unmet clinical needs in neovascular macular degeneration treatment and how emerging therapeutics, artificial intelligence, and other treatment approaches are addressing them. We'd like to thank Roche Insights for providing independent medical education support. So I would like to pick your brains a little bit about the new emerging therapeutics and treatments that are coming up for neovascular macular degenerations. I think that one of the most important thing, and that was also very clear from the previous conversation, that one of the problems is the patients need to come very often for therapy. So if you can tell me, and let's start with you, Professor Tadayoni, how are new therapeutic options that are coming up now addressing the need for longer lasting durability for patients with neovascular macular degeneration?
So I think the anti-VEGF are doing very well in terms of efficacy. So the main benefit coming from the new drugs is the durability. So all of them in the clinical studies propose better regimen and better durability that can really improve the life of our patient by decreasing the burden. So nowadays there is bevacizumab, which is in the market in many countries. Faricimab, who we had the results recently showing also durability, and the PDS also, which is a different system that also showing durability, among others. There are others that are not yet, we don't have the result of phase three, we have other phases. So there's many drugs coming, and the main benefit until now is just the durability, which is a big progress.
Professor Wolf?
Yeah, I can agree. There's a new drugs which last for 3 or 4 months are a big step forward. My concerns are a little bit to know which patient can go for 3 or 4 months and which patients still need monthly injections. We know there are still patients, even with the new drugs, they need monthly injections. And I think this is a very difficult thing to in the education of patients, like we had before. If you tell a patient in the beginning, this is a drug you could use only every 4 months or every 3 months, and then you come back and tell him, no, you need every 6 weeks or 8 weeks or 4 weeks, compliance problems may arise of this. So I would like to see treat and extend studies for the new drugs. And this would help a lot, because I really think to see a patient every 3 or 4 months is good. Longer time intervals may be more dangerous.
Yes, I think that both of you agree that the new drugs are mainly improving the durability, as opposed to what we saw in the phase two. In the phase three, actually, there wasn't any superiority in visual acuity, but there was an extended durability for example, faricimab being able to hold in about 50% of the patient 3 months, and in about around 70%, if I remember correctly, for 4 months, which is great. But and this is already addressing the durability, because I think that most of us would like to see a patient after 3-4 months in any event, patients with AMD. But that I think what you said, Sebastian, is really important about the explanation to the patient. Because if we will not tell them upfront that, yes, 50% can go 3 months, but not everyone, and you might not be able to go every 3 months, he will be very disappointed and may not accept the burden that is coming from more frequent treatments. So I think the main thing is in the new drugs is actually really the durability. And of course, with the durability, we need to make sure that the treatment is safe enough to use in the patients, that they have a longer durability, but the treatment also needs to be safe enough in the particular patient. So, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I agree. And If you think of the implants and or other treatment options will come in the future, like gene therapy, producing anti-VEGF in the eye. So all these is all on your ability. I think there's no drug showing better, best correct visual acuity outcomes than the original anti-VEGF. We are all knowing the ranibizumab monthly. It's not beaten in efficacy. So it's really the point of durability where the new drugs can step in, and it's very important.
Yes, yeah, so both of you touched upon the implantable sustained release device, the PDS. So you're both two of the leading surgeons in Europe and in the world. And this is a surgical procedure. How do you think that for a retina surgeon, not a retina specialist who is not a surgeon, but for a retina surgeon, do you think it's going to be difficult to use the PDS? Sebastian, do you want to start?
Yeah, I can start. I don't think it's really complicated if you are doing regular vitrectomy, so if you're a retinal surgeon. For someone who is only in medical retina, it may be very difficult. I think a good education is very necessary. It may change the centers where this can be done. I think to implant this in a office procedure, I don't see there space for this.
Professor Tadayoni?
I fully agree. I think the procedure is not a difficult procedure per se, but as a surgeon, we know that nothing comes with no cost, and there is always a risk for everything. So we know also that whatever surgical you do, there are some risk. Some of them may be spectacular, but are not very important. If you have a vitreous hemorrhage, this may be spectacular, but may not be so important. So some other problems that are not spectacular, for if you have conjunctival issues, that may not be spectacular, but maybe a real problem and difficult to treat. So the issue will come to how often we have this complication compared to the benefit. And I think what Sebastian alluded is the selection of the patient. And I think this selection would be the key. The more option we will have, the more we have to be able to make the right selection, the right treatment for the right patient.
Yes, I think that what both of you voice here is really important, because albeit it is a minor surgical procedure, it is still a surgical procedure. And even though all of us are now used to do sutureless sclerotomies, it's not a problem for us to do a 3.2 cut sclerotomy. We did it so many times in the past before we had sutureless, and it's very easy for retina surgeons. But definitely the procedure is a surgical procedure and needs to be done by retina surgeons in the operating theater. Then the refill, of course, can be done by any medical retina specialist in the office, but the procedure itself needs to be done in the theater by the vitreo retina surgeon. And then we need to look at the risk, at the side effects that can happen. Ramin, you mentioned the two common side effects. The two, they were not common, but the two most common side effects that happened in the studies. And the one was vitreous hemorrhage, and the second was conjunctival erosions and exposure. But I think that with a meticulous surgical technique and with the way that it is done now with treating the choroid prior to the insertion of the MVR blade, this complication is now very minor. And usually, even if there is a vitreous hemorrhage, then it usually resolves on its own. And if you do a meticulous closure of the conge, you can, because that's the only suture needed there, then you can avoid the complications. So I think what both of you voiced is that we can cope with it easily, because as surgeons, it's not a complicated surgical procedure and the side effects are not that worrisome. Yeah, anything else? Yeah, please.
Maybe even what you mentioned, the suture of the conjunctiva. This is something many retinal surgeons don't do anymore.
Right.
So the younger people may need some training in this. Of course, you have done thousands of these sutures of the conjunctiva, and Ramin, yes, as well. But from these thousands, how much you have done the last year? Only a few.
Very little, right. Yeah.
And so this has changed a little bit our ability to do it right. And you really have to do it right and meticulous to be on the safe side.
So probably some wet labs will be needed for the retina surgeons, for the young ones at least.
At least for the younger ones.
At least for the younger ones, right. So topics we discussed today covered a range of exciting innovations in the management of neovascular macular degeneration today. These new therapies that were mentioned by both of you, Professor Tadayoni and Professor Wolf, will greatly improve the ability of the retina specialists to treat their patients effectively while decreasing the number of injections as well as practice visits. I hope that these EURetina interviews advance your understanding of emerging technologies and treatment options for neovascular macular degeneration.